Great to have you with us on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. We're looking at improving our cooking skills today, especially as it relates to cheese. And we're going to learn some more about the Art of Cheese Festival in Madison. And we have two guests for you to do all that. Luke Zahm is with us. He's a James Beard-nominated chef, owner of the Driftless Cafe in Viroqua, and he hosts Wisconsin Foodie on PBS, which I like.
All right. Thanks.
Welcome, Luke. Great to have you with us today. With us as well, Patrick O'Halloran. Patrick is Madison-based chef whose ventures have included Lombardino's, the Tipsy Cow Tavern, and he's executive chef at the Deliciouser, a spice blending business. And Patrick, good to have you with us. How'd you come up with the name Deliciouser,
well,
by the way?
Deliciouser. Well, thanks for having us, Larry. It started after 22 years in the kitchen with hundreds of chefs and cooks coming through the back door, working with them. I came up with this concept, and I would tell the young cooks, you know, we need to get people to get off their couch, get in their car, drive to our restaurant, and pay us money for dinner. So it has to be deliciouser than they can make it at home. So I had one chef, the youngest chef in the kitchen, who happened to be 6'9", who everyone looked up to, and he would argue with me, that's not a word. That is not a word. So about a year ago, I sold out of my restaurants to my partner, Michael, and then I decided with this new business, Deliciouser. That's the name. Our job is to make food just a little bit deliciouser.
I love it. Well, you know, as we talk with these two guys, and you can see this is going to be a very staid and stuffy kind of. Not at all. So as we talk with them, I hope you'll join in. What issues do you run into when you try to cook with cheese? Maybe it melts funny, or you know, or maybe you've got some questions about cheese pairings. Maybe you got a favorite cheese to talk about. Give us a call. The number is 800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. ideas@wpr.org. Well, Patrick, let's start with the Art of Cheese Festival. What is the Art of Cheese Festival?
Well, the Art of Cheese Festival was a product of the dairy farmers of Wisconsin coming up with this concept that, you know, Wisconsin is on the map as America's Dairyland, but there's so much more. There's so many artisanal cheesemakers in our state, and especially in our area of the state.
Yeah.
And they looked at it as an opportunity to compete with other destinations like California wine country or anywhere in Europe that's known for their food and their cuisine, and make Wisconsin a tourism destination based on artisan cheese.
I think that's pretty cool. And the festival, which is, by the way, it's September 29th and 30th and October 1st. So you guys are involved in the festival. There's a lot going on. There are day-long events. There are half-day events and so forth. Luke?
Yeah. I mean, there's just going to be a flurry of activity, I guess, in even just around the Madison region. I know, for example, I do have one class that is the architecture of cheese, and we're doing half the day at Uplands Cheese in their Pleasant Ridge up in Dodgeville, between Spring Green and Dodgeville. And then the other half of the day, the guests are going to come with me, and we're going to walk through Frank Lloyd Wright's Taliesin. The idea being, Larry, that we're going to give them an example and an analogy that this place is home to so many spectacular cheeses because they are produced and can be produced only right here. It's fantastic. And I think that as we, you know, relate this back into food, it gives chefs like Patrick and I an opportunity to really put a spotlight on a lot of these cheeses and dairy farmers that make Wisconsin so rich in this food idea and this food. I mean, man, I guess I kind of hold it as like as a motto. These cheeses are fantastic, and I use them as part of my identity set. So cooking with cheese in Wisconsin, I mean, It's a pretty easy endeavor. I would be hard pressed to say that you would struggle.
Well, there's, I don't know. There must be 25 events anyway that are taking place Friday, Saturday, and Sunday of that week. I noticed there's a cheese crawl in my neighborhood. I'm kind of I'm an East Side guy, Willie Street. And I know the Giant Jones Beer Company and the Working Draft Beer Company and the State Line Distillery all getting together on some cheeses. And you guys, you're pairing up to do a couple of events as well.
Yeah. Patrick, did you notice that Larry cited all like beer and alcohol companies there? We know what gets him out of the house now.
I think Wisconsin can be a tourist destination for beer as well, you could say.
Yeah.
But yeah, we're going to be doing two events on the 30th, the Saturday, and we're right in the same building as Giant Jones Brewing and the Old Sugar Distillery on Main Street in downtown Madison. So we'll have an early session in the early part of the day over the lunch hour, which will focus on primarily Latino cheesemakers and Mexican recipes. We'll do some demos with that. I think that's a really strong emerging kind of segment of dairy in Wisconsin. There's a fantastic Oaxacan style cheese that we'll demonstrate how to make some quesadillas with. We're going to do some mole sauces and some of the crumbling finishing cheeses. And then in the evening, I think our focus is leaning towards Alpine and Italian. And Luke and I met in the kitchen at Lombardino's years ago.
This guy was my boss. Did you know that, Larry? It's really weird for me to call him Patrick. Usually it's Sir. That was, because he was the guy who signed my paychecks. It's kind.
But it was actually Marcia back in the day, who's my ex-wife, who's also my business partner with my wife, Michelle, and my ex-wife, Marcia. So we have this great kind of, system of checks and balances, I guess I would say, at the Deliciouser. So we have an open kitchen. It's kind of built as a cooking, a stage so that you can participate. We can break down that wall between the kitchen and the guest. And we want to be there and you cook along with us, see what we're doing. We have TV monitors so you can see what we're cooking. And we're just going to have a great time cooking together.
Oh, man. And I assume there's a little eating involved in it, too.
Yeah, I would hope so.
What's the menu going to be, Patrick?
That's a great question. Luke and I are going over to the Deliciouser after this, and we're going to hammer that out. But I can guarantee it's going to be fun, and it's going to be delicious. And I've been working on some recipes over the weekend. This Pommes Aligot, which is a great French mashed potato dish where you whip up the starch and some mashed potatoes and then feed in some delicious cheeses until it's almost a combination of fondue meets mashed potatoes. Also, I was working on a northwestern Italian from the region of Piedmont. They have a dish called fonduta, which is the answer to the Swiss fondue, which is really interesting, made with it's held together with egg yolks. So it's almost like a custard meat fondue, and that one's pretty spectacular. So we'll be pairing something rich and delicious. I mean, you should wear an elastic waistband for this.
I've been playing a lot lately getting the whey from Andy Hatch's cheese making process. And so we were brining pork in it last week. And then we're also taking pork shoulder and braising it in the milk from the farm.
Oh, that's great.
So like finding, I think it's been a lot of fun to really dive deep into the culture of dairy and cheese here in Wisconsin and let that kind of be the guide for the menu.
When you're braising the pork, you're adding an acid, right?
No.
No?
No, I go straight milk.
Really?
And what it does is, like, there's enough latent sugar and acidity in that milk. When it breaks over the braising process, it separates. And you get this really unctuous pork cheese that we dehydrate and make cracklings with.
Wow.
So it's kind of like a pork milk explosion.
That's awesome. I know it almost turns into a caramel.
Yeah.
And it's so rich and delicious. We've done that for years, but we've always added a little lemon to kind of, push that curdling a little bit. But it's interesting to do it just straight Wisconsin. I mean, we don't grow lemons here.
Not much.
We do produce milk.
Yeah, we do. A lot of it.
Well, I'm telling you, you guys are really making me hungry. And that's on September 30th, then. That's Saturday. But all the events, 29th, 30th, and October 1st, you need to sign up. And there's a charge, of course, for these events. And I went online just to see wisconsincheese.com.
Mm-hmm.
is where you go, and you can take a look at all of the different events that are going on. And if you want to sign up with these two characters,
we'll keep you laughing. That's for sure.
You got to go. You got to go there and sign. I assume that's the only place that you sign up, right?
Yeah.
WisconsinCheese.com.
I think so. You know, Patrick, one of these things that actually occurs to me, it's a question that I like to ask chefs, because I think that there are like two real modalities. There's really high creative people, but then there's really high technically skilled people as well. And finding that in the middle, it's somewhere between the Brett Favre and the Aaron Rodgers of chefs. And I remember, you know, working with you years ago, and you were always kind of the Aaron Rodgers guy. Oh, you know, you had a lot of technical pieces there.
I threw a few interceptions.
Yes. Just like the namesake suggests. But, you know, in the contrast, do you feel like as you've aged in the industry, and forgive me for saying so, but it's an amazing career that you've put together. Does your process for events like this change? And when you throw in cheese, does it really develop?
Yeah. I would say my process now more than ever is to continue to have a learner's mind, to be a student of cooking, because no matter how long your career is, you never are going to know it all. So you're always learning. But like I said, with the Deliciouser, I wanted to break down that wall between the kitchen and the guest. I want a personal connection. I just did an event the other day with Vitruvian Farms, a local farm here, and I had tomatoes that were still just picked that day, still warm from the sun. I sliced them for a group of people, drizzled them with olive oil and salt, and it blew their mind.
Yeah.
And it's like, what did I do on that plate? Almost nothing. But, you know, it let the Wisconsin produce speak for itself.
Mm-hmm.
And I think as I get older, it's less about cooking for awards or accolades or anything like that. It's about putting together a body of work that people really enjoy.
Yeah. Well, we have callers online with questions, so let's take one of those calls. Steve in Boulder Junction, we'll go to you now. Hi, Steve. Thank you for calling.
Hi, my question is about scores that cheese receives when they have these international or national competitions. For instance, they may have three different cheddars, and one would score 97.8, and one would be 97.6, and one would be 97.4. What I don't understand, there's such a tiny difference in the scores. What's the real practical difference in the cheese? Could a lay person actually tell a difference between a 97.4 and a 97.8?
Luke, what do you think?
Oh, man, you just hit it right into my wheelhouse here. Thanks a lot for your call, Boulder Junction. You're in some beautiful country, first and foremost. So when it comes to grading cheeses, there's a guy by the name of Chris Gentine. He makes Deer Creek cheese up in Plymouth, Wisconsin, in the Sheboygan area. And Chris is literally a master grader when it comes to cheddar. So he goes around and he master grades all over the United States, but he also produces cheese as a master grader. Deer Creek is this phenomenal cheese that comes from, you know, traditions that go back years and years with the Sartori brand. What he would suggest you do is put maybe these three high-scored cheeses side by side. First and foremost, smell the cheese. You want to smell that really rich, unctuous, you know, familiar cheddar cheese smell. And to be clear, cheddar is a verb. Did you know that, Patrick?
I do now.
Yeah. So like to cheddar.
To cheddar.
Yeah. It's an act. Then I would suggest, you know, putting another cheddar cheese up to it. And what you're going to discover is there's a length of time that cheddar cheese flavor lingers on your palate. It undulates. Usually cheddars, it's sweeter on the way up, and then it has like acidity or bitter notes on the way down. So when they're scoring this minutia, they're actually like paying attention to how long it stays on their palate. What are some of the latent flavors? As you breathe air over your palate, how does that cheese react and respond? And I think, you know, if you even went to the market and bought two cheeses that you saw on that list and you put them side by side, it's a pretty fun exercise to go through that and actually taste them side by side to see what the judges find out. I mean, it's...
I had a chance to experience that earlier this summer. My wife, Michelle, and I went to Viroqua to visit Luke and his wife, Ruth. He had their Owl Farm, which is an outstanding outdoor kitchen facility on their property. And Luke put five different versions of cheddar on a plate. And from left to right, we ate that orange block, you know, that I get in a two-pound block and I just eat right off of, which is, you know, your commodity cheddar. Mm-hmm. And then we worked our way up. And as you see the cheese evolve and the different ages of the cheese and the different crystallization of like a Hook's 20-year cheddar, something just crazy, it's really a great experience. And I think everyone should try that. That might be on the menu at our one of our events.
Yeah.
But if you've got three white cheddars in front of you, the average person probably, if it's 97.4, 97.3, you're not going to probably notice the difference too much.
Well, you're not going to kick it out of crack or kick it out of bed for eating crackers, Larry. That's for sure.
I know. My parents live from Milwaukee. They live in Florida now, and they brought a friend up to Madison to visit who was from the Boston area. And he got a cheese, a $45 chunk of cheese. And I made sure that he got to taste the best of Wisconsin, and I sent him home with all this. And he said, "Are you sure you want to send me home with this cheese? I don't think I would have an occasion to serve something like this." And I was like, just give yourself permission. Eat something delicious from Wisconsin.
Yeah, or deliciouser.
Yeah, deliciouser.
Patrick O'Halloran and Luke Zahm, our guests today, a couple of wonderful chefs, and we're talking with them about cheese. And also we talk about what's the title of it? The Wisconsin...
The Art of Cheese.
The Art of Cheese. Yeah. The Art of Cheese Festival that's going on. I lost my train of thought there for a second. Where you can find out more about that at wisconsincheese.com and sign up for some of these classes. Having some fun with them, you can join in with your own questions. Number to call, 800-642-1234. Email to ideas@wpr.org. Clara Neipert's our producer today. Trina LaSousa, our engineer. I'm Larry Mueller for the Ideas Network. Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. Patrick O'Halloran, one of our guests today, Madison-based chef. He's the executive chef at the Deliciouser, a spice blending business. Luke Zahn with us as well. He is the chef and owner of the Driftless Cafe in Viroqua, host of Wisconsin Foodie on PBS as well. So great to have both of them with us. Questions about cheese? I hope you'll join in. Number to call, 800-642-1234. Email to ideas@wpr.org. Let's take a call from Mike in West Dallas. Mike, thanks for waiting. What's on your mind?
Hi. So I have wondered about this for a while, and my kids asked me not too long ago, why when Little Miss Muffet's sitting on her tuffet, does she eat the curds and the whey? When I was a kid, my cousin had a shirt that said, it was a parody of a Beatles album, it was Speaking Words of Wisdom. I like cheese.
Yeah, I don't know why Miss Muffet ate the curds and the whey. Let's say it was maybe Miss Muffet came from a time where nutrition was extremely minimal. I mean, I'm completely speculating here, so please feel free to tee off on me in the comments or call in Larry's show. But there's a lot of nutrition in whey, actually. So it wouldn't surprise me if, people drank the whey, ate the curds, got the real bang for their buck when it came to using all the product.
Yeah, especially back in those times, there was, peasant food, as we like to cook. You didn't waste anything.
Yeah.
So the whey would have been consumed for its nutritional value. Mm-hmm. And even in Italy, the whey is turned into ricotta cheese. Mm-hmm. So there's a use for it. And when Luke was saying earlier, brining pork in it, that's an awesome idea to utilize every part of the process. Right now, it's kind of our duty to do that.
Yeah, absolutely. And the second question, which was...
Blessed are the cheesemakers. That's my favorite T-shirt from Monty Python and The Life of Brian.
Yeah, and The Life of Brian. No, I mean, I'm glad that the slogans catch on. Usually, you know, working in the cheese world, it gets a little bit punny. But we managed to have a pretty good time and, you know, try not to make people blue with our cooking. I don't really have too many more.
Well, if you go to that website, wisconsincheese.com, where you can find out about the Art of Cheese Festival, there are quite a few I've noticed on that website as well.
Yeah. Mike, go ahead.
Mike, thanks for calling. Appreciate it. Terry in Lake Geneva has a question. Let's go there. Hi, Terry.
Hi. I have a question about aging cheese. You're talking about all of these cheddars, Tony Hooks and a lot of the other ones, and they're always in square packages, which means that they were made from a block that was produced through a Wilson hoop. Now, they take those blocks of cheese and put them inside of a plastic bag, suck all the air out, seal them shut, and then put them in a cooler to 36 degrees. Are they actually aging as opposed to people who make wheels of cheese, set them on a shelf the way aging was actually designed?
That's a great question. Good job, Lake Geneva. You nailed that. So, yes, they are actually aging them in the block form. And part of that process is washing the rinds and ensuring that you get that really good, desirable mold growth. A lot of individual cheese caves have their own particular biome associated therein. So, you know, what Tony Hook is doing in Mineral Point, you could have Chris Gentine up in Plymouth doing the exact same process. But the affinage, the art of that aging, really, really lends itself to the final characteristic. You are correct in asserting that those blocks are then cut and plastic wrapped or shrink wrapped and then put into the grocery store. But I think by the cheesemaker standards and specifically by the master cheesemaker standards, they have to be in block form on those shelves for the regulated amount of time.
Yeah. And a master, and we have quite a number of master cheesemakers in Wisconsin, which is not an easy thing. I mean, you got to spend 10 years first as a cheese working for somebody before, and then you go through a set of courses.
Yeah, it's not unlike becoming a chef. You know, you apprentice with someone or you study for a number of years before you work on your own. And I know that Luke with Wisconsin Foodie, you travel the state and you meet most of these cheesemakers and you have personal relationships with a lot of them, which I'm hoping you'll bring to our event.
Oh, yeah.
But I mean, it's a pretty cool job, a pretty cool gig that you have.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate it. And, you know, for any of you who have watched or followed along, man, what an opportunity. I feel like the luckiest guy on the planet.
Oh, it's a fun show.
Oh, we get to go and meet these people that like color our lives through food. And I got to say that, you know, after 5 years of hosting the show, I know that the number of stories that are out there potentially are unlimited. But I'm always so excited to see these food producers and entrepreneurs and cheesemakers kind of rise up with new ideas and ways to innovate these products, which are already great. It's tremendously inspiring.
Jane emailed us kind of to go along with this, wonders if there's a website for or someplace where she can learn about artisanal cheese driving tours. So get in the car and go here and there.
Yeah, wisconsincheese.com. I know that the dairy farmers have a couple recommended routes or plants that are open to having people come in. Also, Wisconsin Foodie. You know, I'll throw a shameless plug out there. We have a lot of cheesemakers that we've profiled in the 16 years being a production for PBS. And, you know, there's a lot of information out there. I think Arthur and the crew once upon a time had a map and a directory of cheese tours to take. So those would be my two first choices.
Grant emailed us. They're a passionate bread baker and would like to use whey as the liquid in a bread dough. They use cheese in dough regularly, but have never used whey. Would your guests have any suggestions using whey in this way?
I think it would really work if you manage your hydration levels. Just take into consideration that that whey is going to have a high salt content, I would imagine. So you're going to have to adjust your salt levels. And I don't know, how would that play with yeast? I don't know if the whey and the yeast would interact well, but that's a very interesting subject that someone would have to go down the rabbit hole on.
Yeah. You know, whey inherently also has acidic properties to it. So it might react with that yeast unusually. But it doesn't mean that you can't figure it out and tweak it. And by golly, if you do, you're going to be even more popular than I'm sure you already are as a bread baker using cheese in there.
Well, Graham, thanks again for that email. Appreciate it. Annie emailed us too. What's the best cheese? What are the best cheeses for mac and cheese?
Ooh. That's an interesting question. I was part of opening the Old Fashioned on the Capitol Square here in Madison, and we had a very rich macaroni and cheese.
It's really good.
So we always start with a cheddar. So something that's kind of mellow, a good melter, like a 2 or 3 year old cheddar that has some character to it. I like to finish with a little bit of a Parmesan style cheese to give it a little bit of sharpness and depth, but you want good melters. I think Gouda is one of my favorites right now. Something that gives you the cheese pull, the string, a fontina, something like that. What do you think, Luke?
Yeah, no, I think based on the fact that I run a mac and cheese at the Driftless Cafe that is loosely, and I'm going to say that with the air quotes, based on the mac and cheese that we ran at the Old Fashioned, we start with the Westby Co-op Creamery Sharp Cheddar. Then we cut in Wisconsin mozzarella, and then always Pam up there at Sartori in Plymouth, the only master female cheesemaker on the planet. The Sartori Cervecchio, a little bit of grated in there. Get that Parmesan style quality so you get that pull and you get that delicious. That's where it's at, Larry.
Yeah, Cervecchio is great, but if you want texture over the top, Montemore from Sartori is one of my favorites because it's a crumbler.
Yeah.
It's not a melter, but it's got the most wonderful texture to it with the crystallization, and it crumbles. It'll add some texture to the top.
Those terracine crystals are money. It's like Pop Rocks in your mouth.
Well, speaking of money, do you guys ever cook with the most expensive, the fine cheeses, the most expensive cheeses? Do you cook with them, or do you just eat them off a board?
Oh, no. I cook with them. I mean, like, you don't necessarily want to, like, manipulate perfection, so to speak. I had a teacher growing up at Lafarge, and he said always the KISS motto, keep it simple, stupid, applied when, like, really thinking about something that's that delicious. But a way to make it deliciouser oftentimes is to work that. You see
good
what
one.
I did there?
I loved it.
It's to be able to work it in. So I like to take, sometimes if it's different ages of the same cheese, or, for example, working with the Roth Creamery down in Monroe, getting cheeses that I can work into the dish, but then also feature kind of as a standalone as well, just to give diners a different perspective on what's possible with that ingredient.
The Roth was what I was using, their Grand Cru Gruyere for the Palms Aligo. Yeah. Also, I love the Bluemont Dairy Bandage Cheddar. I did a dish with that recently where we just shaved that and served it with a veal stock reduction with the true maraschino cherries from Italy and a really rare piece of prime strip steak.
Oh, man.
So a little bit of that, you can put that into the potato. So you're eating it in the potato puree, but then you're getting some shaved cheese over. So you're getting two textures of it.
Did you just hear Larry's stomach growl? I think I picked that up on the mic.
We're killing you, Larry. Sorry.
Anne from Milwaukee emailed us, the official word for someone who loves cheese is a turophile. Anne says that would be her with Wisconsin cheeses.
Yeah. Well, I'm not that sophisticated.
You're just a cheesehead.
I'm just a cheesehead, exactly. But you say potato, I say potato, and that's cool.
Well, so what are some common mistakes people make when cooking with cheese?
I think one of the things when you go back to mac and cheese is just melting cheese into the sauce. Sometimes it breaks. It becomes an oily mess. So you need to add a little flour or something that binds the cheese to the sauce. That's what I thought was so fascinating about the Italian fonduto is they were using egg yolks to do that without any gluten, no flour added in. So that's one thing you'll see, a sauce that breaks and becomes oily. What do you think, Luke?
Yeah, no, my other suggestion is do not throw out those cheese rinds.
Oh, yeah, that goes in your stock.
Oh, man, I've been making some brodos lately where I'm just taking the rinds of these cheeses and basically cooking it down into this concentrated broth. And all the essence of the cheese gets in there, and you do get a little bit of that, like, gelatinous nature as well. But that's truly spectacular as a finishing sauce. And I think it's something that people, when they're breaking down, maybe they bought a wheel, maybe it's a special holiday, maybe you just you got excited and like wanted to try something new at the cheese shop. Don't throw away that rind. All that's good, good flavor.
So some cheeses are made to melt. Mm. And what are some examples of cheeses with the correct ratio of moisture content to melt?
I think what I was working with over the weekend was a lot of Car Valley product. Mm-hmm. Their Fontina was awesome. And the Gouda, there's a raclette, a Swiss cheese that's just designed to be a melter, probably one of the best melters in the world. I think you can get some of those down in Greene County.
Yeah. There's also the raclette made by Alpinage. And that comes out of Oak Creek, like your neck of the woods.
Oh, yeah.
You know, Milwaukee.
I scored 20 points in a JV basketball game at Oak Creek once. That was my crowning achievement in high school. I still did not make the starting lineup.
Well, 20 points off the bench isn't bad. They have a Mount Alpinage, and it is fantastic. This thing at the American Cheese Society, or the ACS, took first place in its category. And Orphe and Paula, it's this beautiful love story of a man who came to Wisconsin from Paris and then fell in love with a dairy farmer and a cheesemaker. And they are just killing it right now, Larry.
I love those romantic stories.
Oh, man.
You don't talk at all about how many hours of hard work go in.
It's brutal. But the love is true and the cheese is delicious. So,
and the love shows in the cheese, right?
That's right. That's right. That's what you want.
Well, you guys are great fun to have on the show. So some cheeses, in the first one, how do you prevent cheese from melting too quickly or kind of clumping together?
Whisk.
Yeah, whisk. Well, Luke will be doing that when we make the potatoes for 20 minutes of working the starch in the potato puree.
I'm flexing my forearms right now in the studio just to try and get stretched
and
out.
And some of it, some of the recipes I was playing around with, it does clump. It's just a matter of low heat, time, and a whisk. Mm-hmm. And you just got to work it. So there's so many different ways you can approach melting cheese, you know, from the grilled cheese sandwich all the way through. I'm playing around with the idea of making the delicious or a grilled cheese sandwich destination one day a week.
Yeah, that's a great idea. You know, and I've been thinking a lot about the grilled cheese too, because it's something that's like super familiar for people, but you can really, really elevate it easily by sourcing some good cheeses, finding yourself the best bread, and, you know, challenge yourself, Larry, to make the best grilled cheese per your own flavor standards. I think there's a lot of combinations out there of cheeses from Wisconsin that you can't tip this cooking assignment over. It's in our DNA as of sorts.
Well, yesterday I made an omelet, a cheese omelet, and I shredded some cheese myself.
But all by yourself?
Well, as opposed to having somebody else do it for me.
Well, good. That's good.
That's a good start.
It didn't come in a bag.
Okay, yeah.
And that's really what my question is.
So you were cooking.
Yeah.
My question is, I bet if you looked in the refrigerators of every Wisconsinite, you're probably going to find in a big percentage of them shredded cheese that came in a bag.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Already shredded. What are your thoughts on those? And what are the advantages of cooking with freshly shredded cheeses?
Sure. Well, you know, a lot of it, Larry, first and foremost, I don't want to, you know, I think my dad used to say it. I don't want to mow anybody's lawn. Tell them how to do it. Because, like, if you're using good ingredients, good on you. If it comes shredded in a bag and that's what you have time for, awesome. You know, go ham on it. Sometimes, though, those shredded cheeses are coated with anti-caking agents.
I was just going to say that.
Yeah. And so the anti-caking agents actually raise the melting temperature just slightly. And you'd find that as you, like, whisk those in, you might actually have to apply a little bit more heat in order to get them to incorporate smoothly. Now, one of the principles of working in O'Halloran's kitchen is slow and low is often the best. So by using lower heat, a little bit more physical activity to whisk that together, you can ensure that that cheese sauce is absolutely fantastic and, you know, it gets the chef's kiss from everybody
and
at the table.
The other thing I was going to say is if you're doing a dish and you're finishing it with cheese,
yeah,
I want to grate that Parmesan or that pecorino or whatever I'm using to order because it's going to be the freshest flavor, the most intense pop, the most bang for your buck, and we all want to bang for our buck. Mm-hmm. So we would always grate the cheese over the dishes to order.
Yeah, the Parmesan, I can't imagine. It tastes so much better.
Oh, yeah.
When you grate it.
It's so much better than the green can. We can do better.
We can do better. But that was actually one of my favorite cooking experiences at Lombardino's, is we'd bring in wheels of Parmesan cheese and crack them open. And as a cook, it's like Christmas morning. You get to see the freshest essence of this.
Yeah, an $800 wheel of cheese every 3 to 4 weeks.
Yeah.
And when you crack that open, you talk about the crystallization of the cheese. When you take a little part of that Parmesan right when it was freshly cracked, there's never a better taste of cheese.
No. And, I've done that with wheels of Cervecchio. I've had the opportunity to do it with Willie Lehner's Bluemont Bandage Cheddar. And certainly Andy Hatch's Pleasant Ridge Reserve. Yeah. You know, there is truly something absolutely special and magical about grabbing that wheel of cheese, knowing why you're picking that particular one, because you love it or it's tied to your memory somewhere, and then popping it open and you know, seeing the gift that's in the middle.
And the Bandage Cheddar has a lot of the same characteristics.
Yeah.
And I've brought some into the Delicious Hour. I have a girl that works for me, Sydney. She's great. She was our first employee. And she's from a small town way up north, and I got an order of cheeses in, and it was like $450. And she had, why are we spending this much on cheese? I said, you're here to learn about these cheeses. And when you taste them, then you start to understand, and you build up that repertoire of taste memories, and you realize why they cost that much.
Yeah.
There's so much work, so much time goes into these products.
Yeah. Yep.
Well, I want to go back. Here we are. We're running out of time, and we've got the Art of Cheese Fest that we talked about right away in the beginning. You guys are going to be working together on September 30th at the Art of Cheese Fest, a morning, kind of a midday session and an evening session. Mm-hmm. And I just want people to know that you will have a lot of fun to see these guys. But there are many other events going on as a part of it that three-day weekend. So go to wisconsincheese.com, and you can sign up right there.
Yeah, and maybe if you're lucky, you can see Larry Mueller doing his patented cameo cheese grating exercise, which I hear he's really good at.
We can put you to work. We can have you grate some cheese for us. The people want to see it.
thanks, guys. It's been a hoot, and maybe we can do this again. Would you mind doing this down the road sometime?
Just tell us the time, the date. We're here.
Exactly. We got jokes for days, Larry. So you let us know.
Oh man, Patrick O'Halloran, executive chef at the Deliciouser, a spice blending business, and they do a lot of cooking. You do cooking classes.
We do tasting, chefs tasting menus, cooking classes, and we blend spices right here in downtown Madison.
Yeah, and of course, if you want to go to the Driftless Cafe in Viroqua, here's this James Beard Award-nominated chef.
Yeah.
And also Wisconsin Foodie on PBS that he is the host of.
Yeah, but there's no excuse. Now that you've heard it and you maybe have questions, come see me and Patrick and watch us try and muddle our way through it.
I think it'll be really fun.
It'll be a great time.
It will be a great time, I'm sure of that. So We will get them back some point, but in the meantime, if you want to see them in action, go to wisconsincheese.com and sign up for one of their one or both. Do both? You could probably do both, but you'd need a to let your belt out a little
exactly.
bit.
Exactly. Have a salad first.
Yes. I would say don't even eat. Just a cup of coffee for breakfast. Wear loose clothing.
Well, coming up, we are going to be talking about a whole bunch of other events that are going to be taking place around the state with the Secretary of the Wisconsin Department Division of Tourism. That's next. I'm Larry Mueller for the Ideas Network.